You're listening to Raising Your Antenna with host Keith Zachheim.
Hello, and welcome to Raising Your Antenna, where we explore the latest trends and news shaping the B2B technology industry. I'm your host, Keith Zachheim, CEO of Antenna Group, a full-service public relations and digital marketing agency that serves the emerging technology community. Today, we're fortunate to have Pat Sappinsley, a renowned clean technology expert and industry thought leader, who currently is a managing director of clean tech initiatives at the Urban Future Labs. We'll be discussing energy storage, but other topics within the clean tech world as it relates both in New York and nationally. So, Pat, welcome.
Thank you very much, Keith. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. And so if you can give us a little background about the Urban Future Lab and New York Acre and all the different things you guys are doing.
I would love to do that. So the Urban Future Lab is part of NYU Tandon School of Engineering. We run three programs out of that lab. One is an education program for continuing studies for people who want to enter the clean tech world from other professions. That one's called Clean Start. Another is a proof of concept center for early stage IP out of any of six downstate universities. And the biggest thing we do, the thing we're really known for, is the Acre Incubator. The Acre Incubator has historically, since 2009, incubated 48 companies. These are all mission-driven companies that are trying to reduce carbon emissions and contribute to the clean economy in New York State. We hope to scale them up beyond New York State, but we start with New York, which is a very receptive place for startups in the clean energy sector, largely because of initiatives coming out of the governor's office, such as the Reforming the Energy Vision Initiative, which I think many of your listeners know about.
So it's a public-private partnership?
We are funded largely by NYSERDA. Okay. It's a not-for-profit. We don't take any equity in these companies, so it's really a not-for-profit. The companies come to us with top-line revenues. We vet them the way a VC would vet them. I was a VC at Good Energies before coming here.
Okay.
And we look at them. The reason we ask them to have top-line revenues is because we want to de-risk not only the technology, but we want to de-risk the entrepreneur. Mm. I like to be able to pick up the phone and call a customer and say to the customer, did they show up? Did the technology work? And if there was something wrong, what did the entrepreneur do about it? We think we can usually fix a technology that has problems by doing all the things we do to help startups. It's very hard to fix an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So if the entrepreneur is not going to take responsibility and be, you know, a stand-up individual, then we probably don't want to work with them. So we always find that out. One of the reasons we've had such great success is because we vet them so well coming in. We have a 93% survival rate since 2009 of companies that we've incubated. That's exactly the opposite of what happens in the startup world in the United States.
Yeah, I would think so.
About
10 to 15%.
Fail.
Yeah,
right.
Survive.
Right.
So I'm curious. You know, we always look at the market as wherever VC or capital is going, that's kind of how people are projecting the energy industry to be, right? So if money was going into solar, then that was kind of where the smart people thought that all the investment and growth would be in solar. And then if it's going into mobility technology and clean transportation, that's where people think it's going. So you're at the forefront of all this, right? Because you see a lot of entrepreneurs who are coming wanting to be part of this incubator. What industries are they coming from right now? You know, where do they feel the money is and what are they chasing?
Well, the topic of this podcast is storage.
Perfect.
And that is lucky for us.
I was hoping that question would bring us there.
Lucky for us. So storage is exploding right now. It's what we need to enable renewables. You know, people, probably your listeners, understand that if we're creating power in the middle of the night because the wind is blowing and we need that power in the middle of the day because that's when the air conditioning load is greatest, we have to do something to store that power and deliver it at the time and place where it's needed. Otherwise, we're going to continue to build out unnecessary infrastructure to meet that 15-minute-a-year peak. That's crazy. There are very few other industries that are designed around such an inefficient system. So we have to do something to fix that, and I think the REV initiative is a very good start.
So those are called peakers, right, when utility companies are building natural gas plants just to just to meet that peak load.
Yeah, but it's not just the plants. It's the transmission and the distribution and everything else, right. All the control mechanisms. Right. It's billions and billions of dollars that are spent over a decade to maintain infrastructure that is only used 15 minutes a year.
Yeah, wow.
It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy. So we need storage. We need storage so that we can deliver the energy at the time and place that it's needed, which might be very different from the time and place where it's generated.
Got it. Okay. So you made the case, well, I'm sold. but it does beg the question as to why aren't we seeing more? So I know California, for example, has been at the forefront of mandating certain amounts of energy storage to come online. I don't know what other states are doing in that, but why is it that it seems to have been slow? Is it economic? Is it regulatory? Is it the technology? I mean, what are you seeing?
It's all of the above. It's the trifecta. So battery storage has been very expensive historically. Costs are coming down. Policy has been in the way and not allowing for storage. Policy is changing rapidly, and policy changed in California very rapidly because of the Aliso Canyon disaster.
Right. Maybe just give your listeners a little bit of background on that.
It was a gas explosion that destroyed the stockpile of gas that was to be used going forward in California to power these peaker plants. So there have been a few policy mandates, largely in response to the Aliso Canyon problem, that are calling for integrated procurement mandates. These are integrated resource plans where utilities have to come up with ways that they're mixing and matching all the different types of generation in order to meet loads in an intelligent way and plan for the future instead of simply building more and more infrastructure. And this would be non-wire solutions, as we're doing in New York. It would be storage. I think Hawaii has a big need, California, PJM.
I think I've read there's 19 utilities with IRPs right now, which would be about 5 gigawatts of opportunity.
Right. Yeah. So that's policy that's moving us forward on the storage. Some of this is mandates and some of this is goals. In New York State, we've gone with a system of goals. And a goal has been established by the governor for 1,500 megawatts by 2025. This is largely to enable the plan for 50% renewables by 2030. This is to help us to get there. California, I see, is 1,300 megawatts by 2020. We are going to get there a little bit more, a little bit later, and we're helped in this by a dollar commitment that the governor has made. NYSERDA is putting $260 million towards this, $200 million through Green Bank lending, and $60 million for pilots that NYSERDA will pay for directly. So that's going to push us forward to the goals that we need to get to.
So, Pat, you know, utilities have made major investments over many years in generation and transmission distribution, and now along comes energy storage. What are the opportunities for utilities with energy storage?
So that's a great question. I think they see that this can help them avoid costs in building out transmission and distribution. As I said, they've been building out the transmission and distribution to meet that 15-minute load for years. That's what they've been doing until now, and they see that the path forward is not going to – that's not sustainable. We've had transmission lines in New York that have been turned down because of NIMBY issues. So they understand that non-wires alternatives are going to get them to service the load where it's needed, when it's needed, and that storage will be a big part of that. We have constrained areas, and they have to try to work around the equipment that they've had, that they own now, and supplement that equipment in a way that won't overload that equipment. Storage is a very good way to do that.
Okay, interesting. And I think so far we've really addressed more of the utility scale type energy storage potential. What about residential? So how's this going to impact somebody who's living in Brooklyn right now or somebody in northern New Jersey? I mean, you know, Tesla has their Powerwall, so that's an example of small-scale energy storage. But what are the implications for just all of us?
So it's interesting. People talk about the value stack of storage. What are the different use cases for storage, and who do they benefit? So I'm sure your listeners understand the difference between behind the meter, which is in the building itself, and in front of the meter, which is the use of storage that goes between the meter and distribution and transmission and generation. So for behind the meter, when you're at home and you want to test the Powerwall, it's really a lot of it is about resilience. Right. People have been impacted by power outages more than they have in past years. There are more frequent storms. We have the fires apparently in California were caused by wires having trees fall on them. These things keep happening. Hmm. And they'll happen more and more as we have storms, whether they're rainstorms or snowstorms or fires. Lots of these are climate impacts. And in order to prepare for that and give people peace of mind, it's important to have a resilient solution and supply that.
So that's sort of then like the current solution for that is a Generac diesel backup generator.
Yes.
So this essentially will be cleaner and replace it.
Yes. Okay. Exactly, and require less maintenance and no fuel, no fossil fuels at all. In the value stack of what batteries can do, there are other things that will help homeowners or even commercial businesses behind the meter. There is the value of batteries helping with demand response programs, mm-hmm. where energy is extremely expensive if you use a lot of it suddenly. It will affect your bill for the entire month if you draw a huge load suddenly, even if you only draw it for 5 minutes. If you have batteries, you can switch over to those batteries at high demand times. We have a company called Go Electric in the incubator that does exactly that. I'll talk about them more a little later. So there are values to end users behind the meter that are not just resilience. There's frequency regulation. If power is coming into your building in a sloppy, messy manner, it will mess up your machines. That's the simple way to explain it.
Right.
Frequency regulation is only used, you're only using the batteries for a couple of seconds. You're not using them for hours, but it's a very important service that batteries can provide.
On the, as it relates to demand response, so I know there's, you know, I don't know how many millions of, I think there's 60 million smart meters out in the world right now, but we haven't gotten to a stage yet where there's real dynamic rates and dynamic pricing. I mean, is that something that needs to happen in order to really get that usage from, you know, kind of behind the grid types of applications?
There are portions of the value stack that will come into play for homeowners and small buildings later as these smart meters are able to do more. At the moment, most of that stuff is available to commercial users, right. but not yet to residential users.
Okay, great. So you have this amazing incubator, and there's how many companies currently?
We have 17 companies currently.
Currently, and full alumni, you said, is how many?
48.
48, that's amazing. And within those 17, some of them are doing energy storage. So
yes.
let's talk about those and what they're doing and what their expectations are and where we're going to see them in the future.
Wonderful. I'd love to do that. We have 4 companies working in storage right now. We brought in 2 from overseas that have storage solutions that are not dependent on lithium ion. You may know that in New York, the Fire Department of New York does not allow lithium ion in buildings.
I did not know that.
Yes, okay. It's a real problem there. It's like a brick wall in front of the storage sector for New York City. The fire department sees it as a fire hazard. They see it not only as a fire hazard, but as a danger for their firemen. You've seen lithium ion batteries and cell phones explode. Imagine if this is a giant battery that can operate a building for an hour or 4 hours. Yeah. What that explosion would look like. So, and it happens when water is put on the battery. So,
but no other cities have that same.
I shouldn't say no other cities. We're famous for this in
okay.
New York.
All right, fair enough.
So I've brought in 2 companies that are doing storage without using batteries at all. One is called Bren Miller from Israel. This is a company, both Bren Miller and Highview, the other one I'm going to talk about, are more akin to pump storage, which we have in New York. Pump storage, you may know, you pump water up a mountain when energy is cheap, and then you release the water down the mountain when energy is expensive. It turns a turbine. So you turn it from cheap energy into energy that's useful at those peak hours. We have 7 gigawatts in New York now, and it's very cheap. But it's very geography dependent.
Right.
So what we want to do is try to reproduce the cheapness, the low technology risk, the low toxicity, we'd like to reproduce those things in other technologies. So Bren Miller from Israel is a thermal storage technology. It is actually a very well-engineered box of hot rocks. These hot rocks reside in a really well-engineered shipping container. Therefore, it's modular. You can stack them. It's very big and very heavy. But it can take in heat or electricity, store it, at between 200 and 550 degrees Celsius. That's very, very hot. And then release it as steam when it's needed. So it's long duration, which is very much needed. It's low toxicity. It's low cost. It's no maintenance whatsoever. It's modular. Its lifetime is extremely long. It's a very smart technology for New York. It's been deployed in Israel and in Spain. And we're talking now to NYPA about an installation.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So that's one. There's another one that is also similar to pumped hydro. It's called HiView. Again, it's low technology, very inexpensive, and dispatchable.
Are these scalable?
Modular.
Are these
yes.
technologies scalable?
They can be very big. In fact, they're less appropriate for buildings in New York because they are so big.
Okay.
But they can become very big. They're definitely utility scale, or they would work in an industrial site. HiView uses technology that is very well known and used everywhere to compress air. It's a cryogenic air compression technology. Yeah. So there are enormous tanks that take in air, compress it to its liquid form when power is cheap, and then when power is expensive, they release it across a turbine, it turns a turbine. Very inexpensive, known parts from manufacturers you've heard of before. They just launched an installation in the UK that was paid for by the UK government that was 5 megawatts and 15 megawatt hours, and it's modular. It can grow depending on how many tanks you can put on your site. So it's, again, very inexpensive, no toxicity, no technology risk. So it's important to have those available to the New York market.
Sure.
Those are two. A third one is the only one that's behind the meter. It's called Go Electric. I touched on it briefly a few minutes ago. This one is used at a lot of Army bases. We brought her in from Indiana. This is a female entrepreneur who used to run a division at Rolls-Royce. She really knows what she's doing. And, you know, having third-party verification from the Army is also very meaningful.
Sure.
Their units add a bank of batteries to an existing UPS, uninterruptible power supply. In an existing building, it could be a hospital, it could be a big office building, where it's very important for them to have a generator of some sort.
Critical infrastructure.
Right, for critical infrastructure in a hospital especially. Yeah. And they don't want to switch to the batteries and have any momentary lull in the power supply. So she calls her technology Blinkless. It can switch back and forth from the battery. The software is very smart. It can switch back and forth from the battery supply to the grid seamlessly. Therefore, no machines will sense that it's happening. It can also participate in demand response programs. So you can turn this thing that was your generator is, you know, costing you money. You have to run it every now and then. You have to buy diesel fuel for it. You have to do things to maintain it. She's turning it into a profit center by saying if you use that system and our batteries and our software to avoid high demand charges, you will be paid by the demand management programs from the utilities.
Fantastic.
And you can make money off of your generator.
So that further improves economics of...
Exactly. So she has many things in that value stack of batteries. She does have resilience. So if the power goes down, if there's another Hurricane Sandy and you're in a hospital, you saw what happened in Langone during that hurricane.
Yeah.
That would not happen. In addition, you can exercise bill reduction by never actually hitting the high demand numbers that make your bills go up every month. And you can participate in the demand response programs. You can also island your facility if there's some problem going on around you. So this is a really smart technology that can be used in New York. At the moment, she is using lithium-ion batteries. But it can be done with other types of batteries if necessary. So it's a very good technology.
And really, the last issue I was going to get to does relate to lithium. One of the challenges the energy storage industry has right now is supply chain issues, right? So lithium and cobalt, which if you're lithium ion battery, that's what you need.
Right.
You know, it's somewhat like oil. For whatever reason, they're all coming out of unstable parts of the world, with child labor issues and environmental issues and all those types of things. So I guess if you know, technologies that don't depend on lithium ion clearly don't have that issue. But for a company like Glow Electric or other companies that are lithium ion, I mean, what are you hearing about how people are kind of planning for that?
Well, there are other battery technologies coming down the pike. I've gone to enough RPE conferences where I see that many people wiser than I, who are battery engineers, are throwing money at many, many different technologies. I don't want to bet on one of those technologies. Right. But they are coming along. I see them every year. I see them get more and more mature every year and less expensive every year. So there's one out of Tufts University that's very promising right now. There's one out of MIT that's very promising right now. It'll be a few years. And in the meantime, we have things like Bren Miller and Highview.
Yep.
The other thing we have in the incubator that's really interesting that I think blows open the whole market for storage is a company called Voltaic. They just successfully raised a $6.5 million
round. I did see that. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, really interesting company. They're doing data analytics on batteries.
Yeah, and when one of your clients, or one of your, I guess, companies has a next round, that's like you're a proud parent at that point, right?
Yes, we're a very proud parent. Yes, yeah. We tweeted out, Green Tech Media wrote about it. It's very exciting.
It's like getting into grad school or getting their first job or whatever.
Exactly. And we help them to find funders.
Yeah.
You know, this was, you know, certainly they benefited from our help in this round. Let's see. They are a battery intelligence company. So they can look at all of these different technologies. Each technology is spewing different information into Excel spreadsheets so that if you're a grid operator and you want to purchase one of these battery technologies, it's very hard for you to compare vanadium flow to lithium ion because the metrics that they're throwing off are different. So these guys who are PhD in battery engineers have come up with a standardized platform to compare them to each other.
So it's apples to apples.
Yes, exactly. Apples to apples.
Or in this case, vanadium to vanadium.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I got it.
It's pretty cool. And they've also got an insurance product that insures the outcome. So if you say, we've analyzed this, if Voltaic says, we've analyzed this battery, if charged and discharged this way, it will last this amount of time in the short term and this amount of time over its life, they have an insurance product that goes along with that.
Oh, fantastic.
So if you're operating a grid and you don't have Voltaic analyzing your batteries, you're not being very smart.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's a great sales pitch. So we'll make sure to, if we ever do work with Voltaic, we'll make sure to use that in our collateral. Well, Pat, thank you so much. This was fantastic. I know I learned a lot from it. Any parting words?
No, that's it. Thank you, Keith. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to have a job where every day I feel like we're helping to get carbon emissions out of the air and helping young people, growing the green economy. What could be better? It's great.
Agreed. Amen.
Thank you.
And well, thank you, Pat, again. And I hope everybody's antenna were raised from this podcast. And I look forward to the next one.
Very good. Thank you.